This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest Short Shots, the podcast where Rich and I look exclusively at short films. And in this particular episode, we are looking at the latest Etheria Film Festival selection. Etheria showcases work from female film directors, filmmakers, and it's running later this week. Normally, we will put the links to the shorts into the footnotes, but as this is a live competition, we can't do that. But these shorts will be finding their way onto Shudder very soon, so we definitely recommend you keep an eye out for those. Rich, any thoughts before we kick off?
I will say that watching this selection, I was expecting, because of them airing on Shudder, I'd naturally assumed, as others might, that it would be an exclusively horror selection, and I was quite surprised to find that there was a lot more diversity to the selection than I'd anticipated. So that, yeah, as you were saying, they do cover a wide variety of genres, basically pretty much anything really. I would say that to anyone approaching these, don't go in expecting horror movies. You know, there are horror movies, but there's also a whole lot else, as we'll get into.
Absolutely. This is the third installment that I've personally been looking at. The Etheria TV series, anthology series, has aired on Prime, and I was lucky enough to sort of review those prior to release. This is even better, actually getting in on the ground floor of the actual festival itself. So let's crack on. Let's start reviewing some damn films. Our first film then is The Fourth Wall. Chloe fights for her moment in the spotlight. How far will she go to upstage the annoying actors with whom she is forced to perform Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream in French? This is a great kickoff to the selection. It's probably the most avant-garde of the group. I think this is sort of it's got a very sort of post-punk style in the way it's filmed and edited and with its soundtrack. Shot in French as well, it makes it quite interesting. It's got some really cool sort of camera work. You know, the camera doesn't seem to be stopping moving at all as it follows this actress around. And it's got a killer punchline as well. Rich, your thoughts?
Literally. I think what you've said is exactly true. When I was watching it was making me think of things like Birdman, and even, you know, from the theatrical standpoint, but also in terms of the visuals and the music and stuff, like Gaspar Noé films. I'm thinking specifically of Irreversible. Mm-hmm. Came to mind. Whether that's just me, I don't know, but that is what sprung to my mind as I was watching it. It's got an excellent score, you know, very contemporary kind of not dance, but, you know, I don't know how to describe the music, but it's very, very contemporary, very, you know, repetitive, you know, pace, yeah, to it. I'm not very good at describing what music's like, but so I really like that. The structure is quite interesting. How long is the film? It's like 8 minutes or 12 minutes. So it's 12 minutes, and I think it's like three acts. Which is kind of reflecting, obviously, the theatrical performance that they're putting on. It's serious. It's darkly funny. There's moments of humor. So, for example, it is a French production in a French theater, but there's an American actress in there who doesn't speak French, and she causes the lead actress, you know, some quite a lot of frustration. She's on the edge anyway from the moment we see her. It's all, you know, it's a nasty backroom look at the theatre, and then you've got the people in the audience who are like, is this awful or is this fantastic? And then, like you say, it's got that punchline of an ending, which starts at the beginning, because we've got a little bit of an in media res thing going on at the start, but I did enjoy it a lot.
It was a great start to the to the group of films. So a good way, best foot forward and all that.
Yeah, and this is from director Kelsey Bollig. Indeed. Or Bollig, I'm not sure how we pronounce the name, but yeah, it is a French film. It's classified as horror, but it's very much, I think it sets things up quite interestingly, because for the most part, it doesn't feel like a horror movie at all. Mm. It's only really in the closing minutes that anything horrific sort of is introduced. Yeah. So
it's also got that particular sort of color of lighting that we've come to associate with horror, like things like BIT and VFW, you know, lots of purples, mm-hmm. and you know, sort of
dark reds and black, and
exactly stuff. Yeah, a sort of contemporary color scheme. The film that actually reminded me of a little bit, and it is completely different, is a film called Bliss, which is by the same director as VFW. Which is about an artist who's hooked on this sort of very experimental drug, and it has that sort of same sort of energy that this does. So yeah, it's a very good film. So I don't think we're going to be scoring these, are we, Rich?
Let's leave scores on these. Yeah, I think we'll exactly. yeah
good idea. Anyway, that is The Fourth Wall. The next film is Narrow. In a post-apocalyptic world where survival means never stepping off a thin, narrow path, a lone woman must evade a creature that stalks her every move. Now, you know, just say we're not scoring these, but this scores very high on my list.
Me too.
Absolutely loved this. It is a very visual story. There's no explanation as to what's going on. You have to pick up the clues as you're going. And you know, what a way to start with this woman screaming for help and being ignored. And you go, oh, yep. My God, what the hell? You know, what's going on here? and it's not until you notice the fact that you start walking literally on a narrow path, you know, that it starts to sort of, you know, the idea starts to sort of congeal together. Jesus was in the desert for 30 days and 30 nights and tempted by the devil three times. And, you know, it's got that sort of feel to it. You know, it's all these distractions trying to tempt her off the path. You know, if you step off the path, you know, and, you know, there's other people who have stepped off the path and are there trying to taunt her as well.
Is it all a metaphor, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a metaphor come to life, isn't it, basically, you know. Got to stay on the straight and narrow, except it's not a straight and narrow, it's a very crooked, narrow path, basically. And you know, there's various sort of temptations, like, you know, a tin of fruit sort of tantalizingly just out of reach, and you know, people from her past and this sort of thing. It's really, really well done. Yeah, and then this, you know, the flip side of it as well, the editing for that moment. I thought it was superb when it goes from daylight. Brilliant bit of editing, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I think the there's intrigue, suspense, and tension right from the opening moments. I mean, yeah, there's the out of focus, you know, calls for help, as you say, at the start, and you're like, that's a really weird introduction. What's going on here? No exposition, as you say. It's just you've just got to go with it and pick it up as you go along. I think the concept as it unfolds is quite a strange one, and it does sort of open up quite. I mean, it's a good idea, you know, it's a good idea and everything, good question. But then it makes you think, you know, where did the path come from and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So but the, you know, there's no music, as far as I recall. Mm-hmm. It's just tense. You know, it's tense the whole time, and you're just trying to figure it out. And it's beautifully shot. Very limited locations, all basically taking place around this shack in sort of desert area. Small cast. Yeah, it's the people are behaving strangely, and she sees someone she knows. Are they really there, or is it a you know, is it a figment of our imagination? We don't know. We've got no idea on any of this stuff. Is it all in our head? It could be anything. We've got no idea. But it does play fantastically well. And again, the conclusion is very satisfying. This is the kind of thing I could easily see expanded, you know, make this into a longer form story, or, you know, a feature, or even, you know, like a series or something that could develop this. But the great thing is it works in and of itself, which I love. You know, I don't like it when a bit of a story doesn't feel in some way complete, and this does. Even though there's no exposition, no explanations, whatever, it still feels like a perfectly assembled film.
Yep, and this is directed by Anna Chazelle. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Our next film is You Will Never Be Back. After Anna and David say goodbye, just like any other day, something extraordinary happens that alters reality. Interesting one, this, Rich, considering that we covered a film called Parallels on the other show quite recently, which is all about people sort of slipping between different alternate realities. And that's the setup here, basically. This lady, Anna, comes across some sort of weird portal happening in her corridor, and then sees a vision of herself, and then suddenly she's in a dimension where no one knows who she is. Her boyfriend or husband is now with somebody else who's pregnant, and you know, her mum doesn't know who she is, and all this sort of stuff. It's a moment in time, which could, you know, we've seen it expanded. Let's put it that way. We've seen this kind of thing expanded, so we definitely know it could easily be. But I think it works, you know, in and of itself.
Yeah, it's a Spanish film from director Monica Mateo, and it is largely set in a very striking corridor. It definitely has kind of a David Lynch kind of vibe to it, I think. And the story itself, as it unfolds, it's very Twilight Zone-esque. You know, there's not really an explanation. It's kind of everything's normal. You know, everything's been going along absolutely fine. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, just this crazy weird stuff starts happening with no explanation. So it's got that Twilight Zone kind of feel to it. I didn't like the CGI visual effects of the portal itself. That was kind of the one bit that I didn't get on with. But everything else I liked. The you know, again, the lack of explanation of anything was quite interesting. But there's a moment where she sees a version of herself. You can kind of tell where kind of things are going to go. And it's not particularly surprising in that sense, but I did really like it a lot, and say that sort of the production design on that corridor and everything, and the weird stuff that starts happening with it, it was really good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you say Lynch. I mean, yeah, a bit of Kubrick in there as well.
Kubrick, definitely.
Bit of De Palma, you know. De Palma, when he made Snake Eyes, he was sort of saying the whole thing with the corridor, you know, because he had a similar sort of corridor, which he stretched. Yeah. He stretched artificially, sort of, you know, for a particular scene. Anyway, it works very well. So that is You Will Never Be Back. Our next film is Bootstrapped. A physicist travels back in time to save her relationship and, in turn, the world. This was filmed by Katie Erin for less than $100, apparently. It's her and a couple of friends and a couple of camera phones, iPhones. But this, you know, it's simple, but works incredibly well. And it's got a great punchline as well.
Yeah, it's kind of a sketch.
Yes.
The scene. I mean, it plays very serious, but comical. I watched this one last because all the other ones were linked to Vimeo, and this one was actually one we had to watch on via a Google link or whatever. So I actually came to this last, and I was surprised actually that considering it's a female filmmaker driven kind of initiative and festival and whatever, that this was the only film that really stood out as an LGBT story, you know, characters, you know, lesbian characters. So that sort of made it stand out in itself. It was very different to the others. I thought it was all right. I didn't mind it. I liked the sort of punchline thing, but it did feel more like a sketch than like some of the films that we've seen or and that we're going to talk about. You know, are very cinematic, you know, films, and this is. But then again, that just adds to, you know, to the diversity of what this whole thing is about. You know, it's covering the gamut of, you know, absolutely, a little sort of light, low budget sketch, you know, almost romantic comedy kind of thing. Mixed with a little bit like 1 minute time machine or something like that, or whatever it was called. Was it 1 minute time machine or 3 minute time machine or something? That was a really good short film about time travel. The performances are good. I think I'm not sure about the title. I went into this thinking it was a horror movie called Bootstraps or whatever. And it was like, no, it's actually not that at all. So I don't get what the title means.
No, it doesn't mean anything to me either, which is fine. It's an interesting one. Yeah, this. So we got this couple, and one of them goes in the kitchen where she finds her girlfriend from the future. So it's the same girlfriend that's sitting on the couch, but she, you know, further down the line, sort of thing. And she's imploring her that, you know, this is the day they're going to break up. And she has to stop, otherwise she's going to invent time travel and it's going to wreck the future. It's a great little story. It is very compelling for what it is. And I think, you know, the strength of the storytelling shows through, because as you say, you know, it's at the other end of the spectrum as far as sort of budget and production is concerned. And yet it still manages to hold its own through that storytelling and that classic sort of punchline that it has. Next up is Misfits, directed by I'm going to wreck this name. I'm going to say Chani Ray Walker. My apologies. Any advances on that, Rich?
You're right. I struggle with that one. Yeah, Chani or yeah, I think it must be Chani.
Let's go with that. and we do apologize if that's wrong. So when they learn their friend has kidnapped a cop, two sisters and leaders of the Black Panther Party must set aside their differences to navigate one of the most turbulent nights in US history. I've missed out a key piece of information there, Rich, on purpose. Do you know what? You know me, I hate in media res. I absolutely hate in media res. It's usually a very lazy sort of genre
device.
Staple. Yeah, it's a device where, you know, if someone's gone looked at the film and went, nothing's really happening for the first 10, 15 minutes, people are going to get bored, what do we do? So, okay, let's nick a bit from later in the film to show them that, yes, it will get exciting. Anyway, I've been mulling over this all day because I was thinking, this short is absolutely brilliant. If only it didn't have in media res, because we start sort of in three quarters of the way through, and then it jumps back. But the more I thought about it, I think this is one of the few occasions where I think it's actually justified, because it sets up this tense situation, and then it jumps back to where this, you know, this woman is entering the sort of community house of the
chapter
sort of
house.
The chapter house that these the Black Panthers have. And everything is fine. You know, it's a very idyllic scene. Everyone's happy. You're jumping from this opening scene where you're thinking, you know, it, so you're going from this opening scene into this moment of idyll, and you're thinking, well, what changes? You know, what is the catalyst which is going to get them from this to that, you know, later on? And I think that's the only time, every other time I've railed against the use of in-media res, and this is probably the only time I've went, I think it might be justified. Your thoughts, Rich?
Well, this, I mean, as you say, it is an excellent film. While I was watching it, I'm four in at this point, I'm still of a mindset of this is a horror festival. So therefore, I'm waiting for the horror. And I know that you could interpret it and say, you know, this is a horrific event, you know, that's happening, or that's happened and the results of it and all that sort of thing. But it's not meant to be a horror movie. It's not meant to be that at all. It's much more of a, if anything, it's, I mean, on the website I'm looking now, they classify it as a thriller. I mean, it's much more of a dramatic piece kind of thing. But that was kind of where I was watching. And I was really confused because I was thinking, you know, and I've had this when I've watched some of the films on Shudder, which this will be appearing on. You know, I watched a film called Bluebird in My Heart, and there was no horror in it whatsoever, and it really confused me because I was like, Shudder, isn't Shudder a horror hosting, you know, thing? So, but no, apparently it's much broader than that. And this is another example. In this case, obviously, it's a different kettle of fish, but it will be on there. So this is one of the films that was kind of really confusing me. I was like, are they trying to stretch the definition of horror or anything? No, actually, it's not that case at all. Etheria is not just about horror, and nor is really Shudder. So moving away from that, that initial confusion, the film itself is, you know, extraordinary. It's 18 minutes long. It's a very well-rounded story, beautifully shot, excellent sort of, not monochrome, but, you know, it's got that kind of shades of orangey, you know, brown sort of look to it and stuff. It's all set in nighttime or whatever. Looks fantastic. The turning point event occurs about halfway through, and then we jump forward in time, and that's when we get back to kind of where the opening is. Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything or whatever, but it's just a very strong, very topical, you know, dramatic piece that I think, regardless of whether you're interested in, you know, genre, you know, short films or whatever, I would just recommend this in general. That this is something that people should see.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Basically, is what it is. Yeah, and it's the, as I said, it's the only film where I can justify the use of in media res, to myself at least.
I didn't like the title Misfits though. Again, that was kind of, I mean, I know they do say in the movie, they say in that during the course of the film where the title fits in, but I still don't, I don't think it sets up the right expectations for seeing what I think I don't know. I don't know what else I would recommend calling it. But I think it's an awkward one because going in cold is better, I think, but at the same time, you know, you want people to actually
it's a hard one. Yeah,
they
have that sort of call to action sort of moment, don't they? And that's when she uses it with a misfit sort of thing, you know. But yeah, we totally recommend you watch this. It's absolutely fantastic. Next up is The Grey. A former cop works in purgatory and processes people going to heaven and hell. One day, his 20-year-old son appears. It's definitely hitting that sort of right note of, you know, the afterlife as banality kind of thing, you know, that we had in Beetlejuice. And other things. If anyone's seen the series The Good Place, for example, you know, it's got a flavour of that as well. This guy totally relishing his job, basically, as you know, the guy who stamps the paperwork of anyone coming through, whether or not they're going to hell or heaven. It's nicely written, nicely acted, but I suppose it's just something we've kind of seen before.
Yeah, it's a afterlife dramedy kind of thing. I think like defending your life and, you know, like you said, Beetlejuice or The Office, you know, all these kind of different movies of this is kind of that sort of in the vein of all of those, really. Well, not, you know, not the darker, crazier Tim Burton stuff of Beetlejuice, but kind of The Office, the sort of paperwork thing. Actually, the this one is it's more like it's a DMV, isn't it? It's more like
that's what I thought it was when it started.
A vehicle license registration. Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought that. Yeah, and but yeah, it's got that. I mean, if anyone's listened to the previous episode, what we talked about from called The Jungle of Accounting, I think this kind of it doesn't use that documentary device that that film does, but I think it's set in a similar kind of vein. It's got that, you know, like you say, the humor coming out of the mundane and the characters that are being interacted with. But then kind of you got that first part where it's all talking, you know, looking at the computers and, you know, trying to assess the character. And then it becomes about a man and his son, because his son turns up and, you know, what lengths he'll go to try and make sure that his son gets to heaven, not hell.
Yeah, there's not really a lot more to say about it, but it does work very well.
Yeah, it's a how long is it? It's about the grey 10. It's a 10-minute short. Yeah, very fantastical. It's light, I'd say, compared to some of what we've seen. I mean, this coming off of
Misfits,
you know, this is a completely different experience. You know, you've had a really heavy thing. And this is like a little palate cleanser or something.
So that's The Grey, directed by Myra Aquino. So yeah, check it out. Next up, it's Pulvertron 500. I believe the subtitle which came up was the Shagmatic 500, I think.
Something
along those lines. So this is directed
by... Because it's a Spanish film, I think.
Yeah, Spanish film directed by Silvia Conesa. In the year 2065, a man enters an old holographic sex booth intending to take a nap, but he accidentally activates the sex hologram instead. This sex booth is one of the most sordid and horrible things I've ever seen.
Ugh, it's a bit gross, isn't it?
The bit where he accidentally sits in the chair and then has to stand up again. It's like, oh no, just feel really icky, basically, just looking at this place.
It's quite icky.
Yeah, and they do make a point of letting you know exactly what sort of things have been going on in there. So this guy, he accidentally activates the machine. It costs him a lot of money, but he kind of ignores it and just wants to have a nap. But this sort of hologram keeps trying to engage with him. It's an interesting one. And it depends how cynical you are, how you interpret what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I don't really want to go into it at all, you know, because I don't want to sort of spoil what happens. But but there's, you know, it is open to interpretation, you know, whether or not how cynical she is to the situation.
I think you can take it, you know, as you want to. I think, you know, it depends on your disposition as well. I think, you know, I kind of left it with a more of a positive, kind of hopeful kind of interpretation.
I think what swings at it is the way she smiles at the end when she recognizes him, you know, because he's when she reboots. I think, it probably is, you know, genuine. But at the same time, the cynic in me is sort of saying, has he been played?
Yeah, it's set in the future. It's a scientific kind of setting. It's a two-hander, as you say, between this guy and the hologram, and however it works with her. The information about, you know, why he's there and everything all comes out quite gradually, quite slowly. It takes quite a few minutes of setup and, you know, conversation or whatever before the whole story becomes clear, which I quite like because I was intrigued. It was like, it didn't make sense. I was like, hang on, what's he doing? Why is he there? Why is he here? He's doing that, but he's ignoring or whatever. And none of it really makes sense. And then it kind of all gradually comes together. His character goes through an arc. You know, he walks in one way and at the end, you know, he's slightly changed and stuff, which I think, and perhaps she is as well. We're not sure. I think it's an interesting little film, Spanish, and good performances, 11 minutes long. It's a different slice of sci-fi also. Yeah.
It takes a moment as well to set up the environment, you know, so you get the...
It does, yeah, it takes a few, yeah.
Sort of Blade Runner-esque sort of, you know, cityscape. You know, this place is all down at the docks kind of thing, but, you know, you get that sort of like futuristic city backdrop, which helps, you know, sort of set the scene and everything. So yeah, it works really well. And next up is Eye Exam, directed by I'm going to murder this name again. Directed by Aislinn Clarke.
Aislinn Clarke.
There you go. A woman regrets attending a free eye exam when she begins to suspect that her optometrist has nefarious intentions. This is the funnest of the shorts, I believe.
It's the shortest of the shorts as well.
but it is absolutely brilliant. It feels like an episode of The Outer Limits. It's a sort of very cautionary tale. But it's just brilliantly done. I absolutely love this. The way it's shot, the editing, absolutely superb. You know, the alien voice that comes into it. It's just very freaky. And yeah, the sort of reveal at the end, it did remind me of like an old sort of Outer Limits episode.
Yeah, it's a kind of, it is quite, I wouldn't say, it's quite sketch-like, but it's not really a sketch. It's got quite a distinctive tone and feel to it. I say it's only, you take off the titles or whatever, it's only about 2 minutes long. And but the characters are all, you know, larger than, they're kind of exaggerated characters, and it's an exaggerated sort of world. It's kind of in the past, but in the future as well. It's very well conceived. The director, Aislinn Clarke, has done feature films. She did a film called The Devil's Doorway, and which you might have seen. I'm not sure. It came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
and so, because this is an Irish filmmaker, Northern Irish filmmaker, I believe. And this was sort of the... It's one of the quirkiest, I would say, of the of the festival, but you know, introducing a little bit more of that levity or whatever that we've seen with like Bootstrapped and whatever.
Yeah, no, I really really like this. I thought it worked really well. And so from our shortest short to the longest, Who Goes There is 23 minutes long, directed by Astrid Thorvaldsen. Let's start that again. Directed by Astrid Thorvaldsen. When a stranger appears at their prairie in 1880 Minnesota, Ingrid invites him to heal her dying sister, but she doesn't realize that a supernatural force is crossing her threshold. So we got these three sisters who are from Norway. One of them refuses to speak English. We get a bit of a prologue with a guy sort of a campfire in the middle of the prairie, and there's some sort of strange noises going on around him.
You think it might be in media res, but it's not.
But it's not, yeah. He gets away with it. And then this guy sort of turns up sort of outside this this family's home. There's a really good edited shot early on where Ingrid is kneeling in the field, and then you get a sort of quick edit and the camera moves back about sort of 5-10 yards and you see that actually she's kneeling in front of two crosses. It's just really well done. I really, really like that shot. It reminded me of a couple of things, like The Wind, sort of recent sort of horror set, you know, in a sort of similar location. This works really well. I like this a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's set in America, set in Minnesota. Is it Minnesota or Missouri? I can't remember.
Minnesota.
Yeah, it is Minnesota, isn't it? Yeah, and the leads are, or the characters and perhaps the actresses as well are Norwegian. It's a traditionally very masculine environment, the West, you know, and here there are three women on their own, Norwegian ones at that. So that's quite interesting. But it was all actually filmed in Wales. This is a British film made by the National Film and Television School. And the director is Norwegian, Astrid Thorvaldsen. I like this a lot. We're getting back to the horror again now, but it's kind of the presentation of women in the West and stuff like that made me think of another short film, The Automaton, which we've talked about, I think, on the DTV Digest, which was, you know, a different kettle of fish, more science fiction and stuff than this. But the themes of this, which are, you know, again, sort of lacking in exposition, it's all about atmosphere and, you know, you trying to put the pieces together. It's stuff you've seen before, so it's not too difficult. But still, there are question marks and uncertainties which play quite nicely as the film leads towards its conclusion. The title, Who Goes There, made me think of The Thing, which was based on the story Who Goes There. I think there is a touch of that.
Yeah,
you know, it's not an adaptation, but it's not far off. I think if you wouldn't have to do much to have this as an adaptation of that particular story. I mean, the John Carpenter's version was very different to perhaps some of other interpretations, but that's just, you know, that came to mind. I liked it a lot. I thought the location, you know, the sort of stark, isolated location looked really good. The characters were very engaging, very intriguing situation. It's like a lot of films we've seen before where it's that stranger comes in. Are they somebody to be trusted? Are they somebody who's going to help, or are they going to divide the family, or, you know, cause harm? You know, it's that like savior or Satan or something. Yeah. You know, it's like who do you trust? And the one of the sisters is terribly ill, so, you know, there are decisions that are made. And also, the, you know, early on when one of the characters goes out and meets the stranger, again, it could have gone one of two ways, but the character's personality is such that, you know, she takes a certain course of action, and that, you know, it's these actions that tell you about who the characters are, I think, more than perhaps the dialogue does. I think it's very well constructed film.
Yeah, it's got some really good sound effects as well. There's a sort of whistling effect when... Yeah, it's really well done. My favourite part of it actually is when you see all the crucifixes slowly falling off the wall.
That's really good.
That was really, really strong. So yeah, that was really, really good.
This is a proper horror film, really. I mean, it takes a while. It's a slow burner, but, you know, for the Shudder fans, you know, who are expecting a horror film, I think this is probably one of the most satisfying.
Yeah. So, Rich, I mean, we've had a quick run through of all nine of the shorts that have taken part in the Etheria Film Festival. Just sort of sum up, which ones really stood out for you?
Narrow, definitely, was a standout. That was one of my favourites. And also, Who Goes There? In terms of the horror, I think those two were probably... Yeah, I'd say those two are probably my favorites. I also like The Fourth Wall a lot. But you know, for something completely different, Misfits definitely is perhaps the best film on there. I mean, I think it's between Misfits and Who Goes There, which is the best of this bunch, I would say.
Yeah, I have to agree, especially with the Misfits. Yeah, Narrow was probably my, I think for my gut, I think Narrow is my favourite, but Misfits, you just can't fault it, basically. Thought that was really good. And Eye Exam really sort of tickled my fancy, basically. I thought that worked really well for what it was. Just, you know, as I said, you know, sort of truncated, sort of Outer Limits kind of scenario. So overall, I mean, it was a really good bunch of films anyway. I mean, there's nothing bad here at all. You know, they're a very strong selection. The film festival is taking place later this week, so we've no idea who's going to win or anything like that. But we do recommend you check out these.
I don't know if it does it work that way. This festival.
I think there is an audience choice award or something. I don't know.
Oh, is that? Because I know it's what they're going to be doing is they're going to be showing all these. I believe it's in one. One stream, you know, what you don't select which ones you want to watch. I think they play them all together.
Yeah.
And they're available from June the 25th to July the 25th on Shudder. I think that's
award. This is a really strong selection. Hopefully you will check them out on Shudder as well. So thank you for listening and tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.